Blog Talk Radio.
Are you looking to expand your distribution to libraries worldwide? Did you know readers are downloading ebooks straight to e-readers like the Kindle, Nook, and iPad from their local library? There are nearly 120,000 libraries of all kinds in the U.S. alone. Is your ebook available in this market? Would you like to have your ebook available in this market? Look no further. ULR Distribution is assisting authors and small publishers to expand in this market. For more information, send an email to urbanlitreview@yahoo.com. That's urbanlitreview@yahoo.com and start earning in this market today.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Unfiltered Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nisha Lene, and tonight we will be talking to author Sean Christopher about his book, Homie Lover Friend, and what else he has in store for 2017. Just to give you a quick reminder about who I am, if this is your first time tuning in to Unfiltered Talk Radio, I'm your host, Nisha Lene. I'm an author, publisher, and your radio host. I'm also a blogger, and I reside in Los Angeles, California. I do the show to talk to other authors just to give exposure to other authors, their books, their titles, relationship topics. So we kind of center a lot of our books, the authors we book, based on their books about relationship advice and relationship woes. Tonight we'll be talking to author Sean Christopher, who is a Texas native who currently resides in the Hampton Roads area. He is pursuing a master's degree in counseling at Hampton University and spends his time writing urban fiction novels. Sean has been inspired by many different African-American authors and describes his literature as a testimony to the 90s era of book creations with a street flair. Homie Lover Friend is his first urban fiction novel with influences from his generations of the African-American culture and life experiences. He hopes to continue his work, his writing, with Delphine Publications with a spinoff of his book in his anticipated sequel. Just to give you a quick synopsis of his book, when the love lives of three best friends living in the fast streets of Atlanta become engaged, entangled relationships as they know it will be turned upside down in a, I'm trying to read it off the phone, guys, please, sorry. In a charade of lies, deceit, and manipulation, Bua is a gay up-and-coming real estate agent who struggles to find a long-term relationship despite the previous transgression in his past. Monet is a sexy and savvy corporate woman that tussles with adopting a new leadership role in her career and devoting her time to an all or nothing fiance. Roland is a successful entrepreneur and self-proclaimed dog who begins to fear that karma wants him to see the error in his ways. Together, these three will be forced to reevaluate what truly means to be a homie lover friend. Without further ado, we're going to bring Mr. Sean on the line so we can pick his brain. Sean, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing good.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are truly welcome. So I noticed that your book is centered in Atlanta, but you are in Texas. What made you take a different approach to your book? Because most people, you know, they write their books in the city that they're, you know, they grew up, they live in.
Yes. Okay. So the reason behind placing the setting in Atlanta was just basically because one of the characters, Bo, is a gay African-American male, and a lot of the events and things that happen as far as for his story needed to be centered around a wide gay population, and Atlanta has a really good mix of that. And then also with the story,
okay,
you'll find like Roland struggling with his sexuality, and you'll find that there are a lot of DL men and other people that are struggling with their sexuality in a place like Atlanta. So it gives a lot of diversity, so it leaves room for diversity.
Okay, I like that. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, you really had something that really kind of threw me when you said the 90s era. Is that an era that
yes,
you are kind of in love with? I don't know. I'm in love with the 90s era. Everything about the 90s, I still listen to 90s music like it's popping and like it just came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of like how I feel about it. It's more so just the romanticism of the 90s. You have a lot of really good strong, heartfelt movies that came out during that time, kind of like The Best Man, Love Jones, those types of things. So I want to incorporate that type of love into my books and my novels, kind of like there's a street flair, but there is that romantic at-home feeling that you get with my books as well. So that's what I mean by the 90s era type of love.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So when you were going to, because Homie Lover Friend is your first book, and you self-published that, correct?
Yes. Originally it was self-published, and then later on it did get re-released by Delphine Publications.
Okay. What made you want to title it Homie Lover Friend? I know the whole 90s theme, that I love the title of it. As soon as I read it, when your information was forwarded to me, it just made me think of R. Kelly already.
Yes, that's exactly why. That's exactly why it was named Homie Lover Friend. It was because of the song Homie Lover Friend by R. Kelly, the remix, actually. It's one of my favorite songs. And in the song, if you listen to the lyrics, he describes what he wants in a lover, part homie, part lover, part friend. And each one of the characters is each one of those different words. So you would think of the lover as being Bo, the friend as being Monet, and the homie as being Roland. And they each play a role in the love story that is Homie, Lover, Friend.
Okay. Well, I definitely want to congratulate you on that. That, you know, you don't find too many people who take a lot of consideration into all of that. And that's super dope.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I try to consider every aspect of my art because I do want it to be as realistic as possible and as relatable as possible. So you'll find a lot of different dynamics inside of the book and different subjects that are tackled within the first part of the book, because there is a sequel that'll be coming out later on.
I did notice that on Amazon that you do have a sequel coming out sometime in April, correct?
That actually is a spinoff to Homie Lover Friend. So some of the characters that are in Homie Lover Friend, like Bo, Roland, and Monet, are included in the book coming out in April 4th. It's called Jaded, but it's a spinoff of that. So it has,
okay,
it's a completely different character that goes through her own set of issues.
Okay. And what was my next question? Okay, so you started as a self-published author. What made you want to go over and cross over and become a published author under someone else's publishing company?
Well, I did have moderate success as a self-publisher. My book basically traveled word of mouth through the Hampton Roads area. What made me want to sign off on go for a major publisher was just because of the accessibility. Then, of course, with Miss Tamika Newhouse, I think she's great. Her vision is wonderful. And I actually took some time to explore the artists that she had underneath her label before I signed to be a part of her label. And, you know, I think that their mission is really great. And I think that I added to the already great set of label mates that she had. So that's what made me want to be a part of a major publication, just the exposure and being able to stand for something greater than myself.
Okay, I truly love that, and I definitely commend you on that. I definitely commend anyone who can take the courage to do self-publishing and then, you know, kind of want to evaluate, you know, and go into that way. And Tamika Newhouse, you guys have been from her publishing company. I definitely want to thank you guys because you guys have definitely been coming and showing your support and interviewing and for Unfiltered Talk Radio. You are the, I want to say, maybe third or fourth person from your publishing company that I've interviewed. So
mm-hmm.
I definitely want to say thank you for that. And to Tamika, she is definitely someone I follow within, you know, her career as a publisher to show, like, you know, I love the reputation and the brand she has created from herself from being a young, you know, teen mother. So you definitely are
mm-hmm.
under someone who definitely knows what they're doing.
Yes. She is a very, very huge motivator in my continued success in my book. She gives wonderful tips and pointers on what I should do, you know, some things of what I shouldn't do, and really has helped to carve me into the author that I'm becoming. So I'm very appreciative of that.
And that's definitely dope. So let's dig a little bit deeper. So, Homie Lover Friend, what made you want to go with that storyline? You know, when we, as authors, you know, minds are always going, what made you settle on that storyline?
Well, I wanted to create something that was different, something that was kind of familiar in that it has that 90s type of feel to it, but then also something that is more modern, because nowadays people are more open with their sexuality. People are more open with themselves in general. So I figured blending the two would be making a three-sided story where each person that has, they have their own set of issues, their own set of problems, they're able to speak. So you'll see three completely different people within the story that are able to be friends. So you have Roland, who's a straight male, you have Monet, who's of course a straight female, and then you have Bo, who's a gay character, and he's friends with both of them. And I feel like that's more representative of what is currently going on in the world, and I wanted to showcase that. So that's part of the reason why I wrote the book, and I felt like it would make it stand out amongst all the other books that are out there nowadays.
Okay. And does this book, does any of the characters have any, share some of the characteristics of yourself? Do you see any of yourself, or did you share any of your raw emotions within the characters?
Mm-hmm. I see a bit of myself in each of the characters. Like Bo, one of his major characteristics is that he wears his heart on his sleeve. And I can definitely attest to that, especially in my younger years. I know I'm not that old, but, you know, in my younger years, my more naive years, I was very much like that. And then Roland, you know, he has his moments of roughness. You know, he likes to have fun and all that stuff. And that's very much me at points in time. And then also the career-driven aspect of Monet is also me as well. But then I think of my friends and family and their personalities, and I kind of blended all that together to make the characters seem real. But yes, bits and pieces of my own life are put into that book.
Okay. And so we know yourself, you're signed under Delphina. What are your, we know you're releasing the book, Jaded. Is it Jade or Jaded?
It's called Jaded, yes. Mm-hmm.
Jaded, coming next week.
Yes,
what
it
are
is.
Your
it's
plans, what are your plans for this year? Are you attending any, let us know, are you attending any book events? Do you have any other mm-hmm. releases that will be coming out?
Well, for now, Jaded actually is my most current release. I do have a couple of book events that I'll be attending in April. I'm going to the AMBC Awards this summer as well, so I'm excited about that. So I've just been kind of and then I also want to do a release party as well. I'll probably do that around May or June, where I'm going to do a release party for both books at the same time. So I do have a lot of different things going on in regards to the book. And then, of course, the advertisements online and through social media, Facebook, Instagram, all those different things, that's continuous. So, yeah, I have a lot going on in that area.
Okay. We definitely want to congratulate you on this. Now, you are currently still in school studying counseling, correct?
Yes, I'm in my last semester.
Oh, well, congratulations with that. That is
thank
wonderful.
You. 7 long years of hard work.
It isn't even just 7 years. Like, that's a continuing from grade school. You just keep going and just different stuff is just trying to get through it. But I definitely want to commend you on that, because I'm still in a struggle of trying to finish up a few classes myself.
Yes,
it
is a struggle.
I definitely want to commend you on that.
Thank you.
What made you want to become a writer?
Well, it never was really on my mind to become a writer. When I was younger, I used to write a lot of poetry. I actually went to this place, and one of the places that I used to live in, Killeen, is very close to San Antonio, my hometown. And I would listen to the spoken word there. It was this out-of-the-way place. It was very small, very quaint, and it had like a Jamaican feel to it. And a lot of people would just go from different walks of life and speak their truth through their poetry. So I was shy back then, so I would just kind of listen. But when I would go home, I would write through me being inspired by everyone else that was there. I would write my own poems. And so I did that for a couple of years, and then I kind of stopped and got fascinated with, well, I've always been a reader, but I got fascinated with the African-American literature and the stories of relationships, part of the reason why I'm a counselor. And all of that tied together into wanting to just write a book and be able to tell my own truth through the use of writing novels. So that's how that started.
Okay. And you, well, of course you write urban fiction, but do you have it down to just a general of urban fiction, or is it urban romance? And what made you choose that particular genre?
Well, I would like to consider urban fiction. The reason why I say that is because I don't like to put myself all in one box. So if I was to say street lit, I would only be writing about street issues and street problems. And yeah, my books tend to have a bit of everything in it. So to make sure that it's all inclusive, urban lit would be the best way to categorize my writing.
Okay. I definitely like
that. What was the, I think you asked me something else as well.
Why did you choose that genre? But I think you kind of answered that in a nutshell.
Well, yeah, I chose that genre because I'm a counselor and I really, really love the like to explore the relationships between people, how they're built, how they disintegrate, and what better way to do that than to write about it. So that's why.
Okay. And you said you've always been a reader. So
yes,
let's go. What offhand, what is three books that you have read multiple times?
Okay.
And they never get old to you.
Okay, so three books that never get old to me. First off would be Addicted by Zane. I think is the most wonderful book ever. I think Zane is a wonderful, wonderful writer. I look up to her very much.
Amazing.
Yes. Another book that I think is really great is Nervous. Again, that's by Zane. And
you don't have to tell me.
I know
Zane.
Oh, okay, cool. We can keep going. And then the other one is Fly Girl. And you're familiar with that one? Yes.
That was actually my first urban fiction book.
Yes, I love that book. And then, of course, the series. There's a series to that, as you know. So, yeah, that's great as well.
Fly Girl was my first urban fiction book. And then I got hooked on Zane. And then I read The Coldest Winter Ever.
See,
and
everyone keeps
telling
me about that one, and I need to read it. I need to read that. It's Sister Soldier, right?
Yes, Sister Soldier.
Yes. I'm going to have to check that out.
Omar Tyree was my first urban fiction book, and it was my first urban fiction book that crossed me over from the kiddie literature that I had read that you got, you know, from the book fairs at school. And it was actually a book that was – my older cousin had it, and I was left at her house, and I read it, and I was like, whoa, what is this? And then in middle school, my friend, her mom was a part of Black Expression at the time, so they would get all these books, and Zane, she got Nervous, Skyscraper, Sisters of the ATF, and we just went on a bend, and we read nothing but Zane. And then someone gave me Coldest Winter Ever. My cousin gave me Coldest Winter. She's like, well, you like reading. Well, go ahead and read this one. I love this book. I read that one, and I have officially been hooked on reading since the age of 14 of urban fiction.
Yeah, I started around that age, too, around, like, urban fiction around 13, 14, and that really opened my eyes to the world. I just put it like that. Like, it really opened my eyes and made my own descriptions of my own writing more descriptive.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So we on Unfiltered Talk Radio, we like to have what we call three do's and three don'ts.
Okay.
Three advices of do's for an inspiring author, a self-published, a struggling author, just in general of entrepreneur author. Three do's and three don'ts.
Okay. So the first do, of course, would be to never give up. The second do would be to write every day, whether it's a sentence or 10 pages or 20 pages, you should always write every day. And then the third one would be to always remember to promote yourself because you are a brand. So whether you're a self-published author or you're published underneath a major publication, you must always promote yourself because you are your brand. So those are the three do's.
Okay.
The three don'ts would be to never push your writing off for the next day. because it'll always roll over into the next day and the next day and the next day, and then eventually you'll just have a manuscript that's been sitting there for years. Another don't would be to not edit your own work. And I say this to mean that a new, fresh pair of eyes is always, always appreciated. They'll catch things that you didn't catch. And then my last don't would be to never give up, and just continue to strive. And if you truly love what you do, especially being a writer, you'll continue to write whether you have one fan or 10 million fans. So, and the best writers are the ones that love what they do. So if you love what you do, you'll be fine. So never give up.
Yes, yes, I love that. I love that. I actually read somewhere not too long ago, it says, while, you know, some people, you look at those Jane Pattersons and all of these people who have you this, you know, big fan base, and you look at them like, how can I get there? It's because they never quit it. They at one point they were amateur too. They didn't know this, but you got to keep going and keep going. And I tell everybody, within myself, each book I release, I want to make sure it's better than the last. I want to go and read those reviews to see what they said they didn't like about that book and how I can improve that next book.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. It's all about research and to always expand your knowledge. Oh, excuse me.
Yes, please. Please tell them. Please say that again.
I was just saying it's important to always do your research about the world around you and to make sure that you expand your knowledge. Knowledge is infinite. So.
Man. And make Google your best friend.
Yes, Google is my best friend every time I write.
Google is your best friend. Google, Yahoo, Bing, whatever. Just make a search engine your best friend.
The internet gives you the answers you need at the drop of a dime.
Man. So what is the average day of writing for Sean Christopher? How do you get your writing juices going? What is like a writing setting that needs to happen for you to just get in your zone and go ahead and just flow?
Well, I usually do a majority of my writing late at night or early in the morning, around like 1, 2, or 3. I don't know. My mind just seems to cut on creatively during that time. So what I like to do is I like to drink like hot tea or like have a Coke or something and just sit there and write. And sometimes it'll become a story, and other times it'll just be jotted notes of different settings, places, characters, their character traits, physical, emotional, all those different types of things. And it kind of just, it builds on itself. And that's how I get in the writing mood. And then sometimes I listen to songs based on the emotion that's needed for the scene. So, for instance, there's a scene in Homie Lover Friend where Roland gets mad because he gets stood up by one of his dates. And he tears out of the parking lot and does a bunch of destructive things. I don't really want to give it away too much. But just to get me in the mood to describe that angry feeling, I listen to something like Hard and Fast, kind of like Future, you know, that kind of stuff. Versus a more romantic scene where I would listen to like R. Kelly or like Aaliyah or something really just flowing and loving to make those emotions spill on the paper.
Okay. I think I'm so the opposite than everybody. Like, I can listen to, like, it doesn't matter the song. Like, it's just literally the person, genre of music, and I can just listen to over and over and over again. I know with one of my books, I think I listened to K. Michelle and August Alsina the whole time I wrote the book on repeat. And my cousin kept saying, like, why is that all I hear you listening to? I'm like, you don't understand. I'm in, like, this, it just flows. I try to listen to other stuff. I try to listen to Pandora, and it's like, no, then these songs come on. It breaks my focus. I have to just listen to this. And people find it, they be like, writers are so weird. You guys have so many weird things. And I'm like, it's just what goes for us. We have to go with what works
for
us.
Get those creative juices flowing however you can.
Right.
Everybody's
we have to
different.
Go.
Yeah.
Like how you said, you can do tea and soda. I'm more of a coffee tea drinker, but I've interviewed a lot of people who can drink wine or alcohol and write, and I cannot do it.
Oh, no,
I'll be
if
sweet.
I did that, right, exactly. Or if I did it, I'd wake up the next day and my sentences would be all messed up.
And so many people would be like, yeah, it gets my juices, my music, my little, my alcohol. And I'd be like, I wish I could have a cocktail and write. I'm like, it doesn't work for me. But like you said, we
yeah,
all have
our own
little thing.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me either. Yeah, we do.
When do you promote your books outside of the social media world? Like, do you go out just randomly pass out flyers, talk to people about your books?
Mm-hmm. I do a lot of my my promotions around my campus at Hampton University. I was actually the treasurer for the Department of Counseling. And so I familiarized myself with a lot of the students there. And then, of course, my department chairs and my colleagues were supportive of that as well. So a lot of my promotion is done at the school because, you know, you have kids around my age that are willing to read that type of material. So it really helps to be around people that are within your age group.
So knowing your target market is definitely something
yes.
that
mm-hmm.
It goes with promotion, to know your target market.
That's important for every writer, yep.
Yeah. And you told your family that you were prior to you finishing your novel and publishing or whatever, did you kind of tell your family and friends that you were writing, you know, working on a book, or did you just like, oh, you know, I wrote this book?
Well, see, how it began was I actually just was playing around with the manuscript. So I wrote the first chapter. It was the first three chapters, and each chapter has each character because there are three characters. So by the third mm-hmm. chapter, I had written a chapter for each one of the characters. And so I had one of my close friends check it out, and she was like, wow, this is really good. Like, you should keep going. And I was like, okay, you know, so I kept playing with it and it eventually became a book. Once it became a book and it was done, that was when I started telling my family and my friends, because I didn't want to put myself in a position where I was telling them I was writing a book. And then if it never got done, it was just something that I didn't do. So I waited until it was done before I started sharing it with everybody else. But I did tell a friend or two about the process.
Okay, that's dope. And so once it was done and you did present it to your family, what was the reaction?
Well, my family's always been really supportive. So, of course, they were proud of me. They asked me how I had the time to write it, because I was still doing my internships during that time. I was still working and I was still going to school. So I had multiple things on my plate. And so they asked me how I had time for it. But once again, if you love what you do, it was more so a hobby for me than it was an actual job, just sitting down and creating a story that people would end up enjoying. So it was really more like fun for me after all the numerous things I had to do throughout the day.
Okay. And has any of your family members actually read the book?
Yes. Majority of my family members have read the book. I know my mom's read the book, of course. A bunch of my cousins were all around the same age in our 20s. So they've read the book, of course, giving me positive feedback. Whole bunch of my friends have read the book. And then a lot of my colleagues from school as well. Then, of course, you know, I do have my other readers outside of that. But a lot of my family and a lot of my friends, majority of them are very supportive.
Okay, that's very good. That's very good. Because, you know, being a writer, that's definitely something that's really, really good to have that family support. And, you know, because sometimes, you know, in those days when that story and them characters is giving you a hard time, having that, you know, undying support and back against the wall is definitely always needed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I completely agree.
So we know you're going to be at the AMBC Awards. Are you doing any other events? I know you want to do your book release, but any other events within the to promote the book?
There is actually supposed to be something going on in New York. I haven't pinned it yet completely, but I've been looking into it. It's like an expo that's going to be done around the summertime, I believe a month or two before the AMBC Awards. I'll probably be going there to promote my book as well. There's
okay.
going to be a couple hundred authors and other people there that do literary work. So I'll do a lot of that there. And
okay,
of course
that's definitely good.
other book things that I have planned, other book clubs and things to visit.
And outside of writing, within the literary industry, is there anything else you want to do besides, pinning your books? Is there like motivational speaking you want to go around and do?
I would actually love to do motivational speaking, more so on the counseling spectrum of things. And if I could tie my books into that as far as with relationships, that would be really great too. I also would like to write a book full of poems, because I have, like I was saying earlier, hundreds of different poems that I'd written when I was younger that were actually really good, along with other poems that I've written throughout. I started writing when I was 15 and I'm 25 now, so it's 10 years worth of different types of poems, and I would like to get them together and make a compilation of it and form it into a book. So hopefully that does get done, but I have to sift through them first and find the good ones.
Yeah, pick and choose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely think that's good. I have always been a fan of like reading poetry, but I've never been a fan of like sitting there just doing it. I've done spoken word before, and I loved it. I sometimes just coming off the dome, depending on, just the feel of it, I can do. But I'm more of a structured writer. Like, I have to write, which is one of me and my cousins, we're total opposite. She can't write a book, and she's trying right now. So she's like, this is a lot of work. But poetry all of our life, that has been her thing. And the longer short stories and the thing are my thing. So I commend anyone with the poetry, because I'm like, I can't do it. I'm long-winded. But I definitely hope to see that, within the next few months or within the next year from you as a poetry, because there is a lot of people that love poetry and they love to, go ahead and read other people's poetry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because poetry is like a quick fix to just the problems you're going through, like a song.
Yes, it's very much chicken soup for the soul. The one thing that I will say about poetry, and when I was writing poetry a little bit more heavily, was that it does teach you how to put sentences together and make them have a certain type of flow. And then it also forces you to have to come up with new words. A lot of my word bank that I have in terms of writing came from poetry, because when I didn't have a word that rhymed with something to make it flow, I would have to look up new words and learn the meanings of new words to add them to the poem. So it helps with being able to write, because you have a larger word bank.
Okay. Word structure and wordplay.
Always.
You know what? I actually learned from a mentor a few years back. I feel like I want to, incorporate more words into my vocabulary. And I don't know, it was just silly. But she was just like, well, you know what? With every book, set out to write a certain amount of words and learn those books and incorporate those books in that new book that you're working on, that new merch, that new thing. So randomly, I'll just go and, like, for maybe weeks, I'll go into the dictionary and I'll write down the word of the day, what it means, and, the definition of it. And when I go to work on my new manuscript, I'll just go over these words and try to incorporate those words into my new manuscript. So now those become, because, and then after going through your manuscript, you're going through the first draft, second draft, and everything, those words become a part of your vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
a brilliant idea. I'm going to have to adopt that from you, because
right. And it was something I got from somebody as my mentor. She was like, write down the words. She was like, and then you adapt them. And then now as you go through, you go through your first draft, these are words that now you're reading often. You're seeing, you're reading, you're becoming and having a relationship with them. So now they become a part of your vocabulary. So I try to do that with every book so that I can build my vocabulary. And just because I'd never want some of my words from this book to sound like this book, because I don't want this character to sound like this character. So sometimes you have to change up the vocabulary, change up the, the slang, the dialect.
And see, I get nervous about that. So I definitely need to try that. It's like while I'm writing, like when I was writing the second book, Jaded, I was kind of worried about it sounding too familiar. Like I want it to be familiar because I want people to have that at-home feeling and they feel like they know the author, but I don't want them to feel like they're reading the same character, like you were saying, with just a different name.
Right.
So it does help to build that vocabulary up and switch the words
right.
around a little bit.
And then another thing I do, I've never had a problem with, like, character development, but I had wrote a book, and I think, I don't know if it was coming from, like, a hurt place. The characters, they were different people, different relationship roles, but they sounded so much alike. So I had to take my stuff, and I Googled my friends. So I go and I Googled, and I found, like, different things of people have for a character resume. So I took what one this blog said, this writer said, this writer, from this genre, and I created my own document of character development. So now when I go to sit down, I'm writing this, and now I kind of know who this character is. I know she don't like this, she likes this, and, you know, it gives me an easier sense that when I go to write now, I've already created this character so much that I know her, so when I'm writing him, I know who he is. I know what he likes. Mm-hmm. I know how he sounds, so that I don't confuse him with any other character in the story or any other character from another book, so that my characters don't sound the same.
See, I do kind of like the same thing, only it's more so zodiacal. So I'll pick a zodiac sign for my character. So for Monet, I made Monet a Gemini. For Roland, I believe I made Roland an Aries. And then for Bo, I made Bo a Cancer because he's caring and loving. And so all the different characteristics that fall underneath those zodiac signs would just apply to my characters, and then I would kind of build their responses out that way.
Oh, I like that. I've never heard of it like that. That's dope.
Mm-hmm. That's how I do that, and it kind of helps me structure what their responses will be and how they put their words together when they do speak to other characters or their thought process and stuff.
Oh, I like that. I never thought about it like that even mentioned zodiac signs, but I like that idea. That's really dope. That's different.
Well, thank you.
it's different. I love it. That's one thing I do enjoy about doing the radio show. I'm a very shy person in person. But I do like to do the radio show because it gives you a way of interacting with other authors and just talking and learning new things, new methods, and just being able to share that dialect with somebody else who, I won't say have the same mind frame as you, but kind of do, because talking to someone who's not a writer, they don't totally understand when I'm in writer's mode or anything. But talking to another writer, they get it, they understand, because, you know, they go through the same thing. So every Friday, I love to tune in to see who I'm interviewing, their writing process, and how they do things and things they write. So I definitely love it. That's one of the perks I love about this show.
Yes, and I really appreciate the tip that you gave me. I will be using that and building my word bank up.
if that's what we're here for, you have to share the knowledge, like you said, and pass each one, teach one, so that we can build this community, because urban fiction isn't what it used to be, and I wanted to get back to that.
Yes,
and
definitely.
I know,
we gotta share,
you know,
the
change
wealth.
Starts with me. What was the last book that you read, and how would you rate?
So, ironically enough, the last book that I actually read, and I read this book in, I believe, 4 days. It was my publisher's book, Tamika Newhouse. It's called The Ultimate No-No, and it's like a 4-series book. And I read that whole book. In 4 days. It was wonderful. It was full of dramas, full of everything. And it was also, the setting was also in Dallas. So that really, well, Fort Worth. So that really made it even better, because that's my hometown, Texas. So I ate that book up in 4 days.
You did say your hometown was San Antonio?
My hometown is San Antonio, yes, but I have family everywhere. So I have family in the DFW. I have family in Houston, all parts of Texas. So I'm very familiar with Texas. Now, outside of that, I wouldn't be able to point you in the right direction.
Well, actually, I used to live in San Antonio. My aunt still lives there, and then my cousin lives in Dallas.
Yes, it's a great place.
Born here in California. Born here in California. But my dad was one of those who liked to move around. So I've definitely, I lived in San Antonio, Texas for maybe 2 years. And then we came back to California. I did like it because let me tell you a little bit about it. So I live in California where there's a mixture of Hispanics, Blacks, you know, Asians and everything. We moved to Louisiana, and I was, like, shell-shocked because there were only Blacks and whites in Louisiana. And we moved to a little small town that my grandparents were from. There was no Hispanics. There was no other races. So I was, like, kind of, you know, I spent 11 years of my life in California, so I was like, wait, there's no Hispanics there. Like, I was just really, like, kind of shocked. So I lived there for a few years. So when we moved to San Antonio, I was like, okay, I don't feel out of place anymore. Like, these are the people I've kind of grew up my whole life around.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like I was back in L.A. all over again.
Yes. For me, I just noticed that San Antonio itself is very eclectic. Like, there's a lot of different mixtures and cultures there, especially Hispanic and Black. And you see a lot of different mixed people, and it's very much a melting pot, and that was one of the things that I really liked about it.
Yes, it was definitely something that I truly appreciated. I was like, what? Because when I say I was so shell-shocked, like, wait, what do you mean? Like, there's none here. So when we moved to Texas, I was like, okay, so here, this is where they are in the South. This is it. We lived there for about 2 years before we moved back to California, and I've pretty much been in California ever since then, I think.
Well, see, I've wanted to visit California. I went to California when I was 11, 12 years old. I went to San Diego. And the only thing I really remember are the taco shops that line the streets and then the weather. Like, the weather was perfect. It was sunny, but it wasn't hot. Like, it was great.
Yeah, everyone loves sunny California. Hasn't been too sunny lately, but we're definitely spoiled because anytime people always laugh at me, anytime they be like, it dropped below 50 in California, y'all all of a sudden, y'all freezing. I'm like, I'm sorry. That's just, we're used to the 70, 80 weather. We're used to 70s on a good day in the springtime. You know, that's just, I'm a sandal girl. So, and a partial of me being a sandal girl is because I was born and raised in California. Where,
like in Texas, it gets hot. When it gets hot, I mean like 110, and that's burning up horrible. So now that I live more so on the East Coast, I get the heat, but not to that extent. And when people complain about how hot it is, I'm like, if y'all move to Texas and experience that summer heat, then you'll know what real heat is, because 105, 110 is not a joke at all.
That's like the valley here. That's like the deserts here, like Lancaster, California, where it's like the desert, and they'd be like 110. I'm like, I can't deal with that. No.
No, I couldn't do that.
Okay. That's like nosebleed. Like, no. So I'll stick in my little Southern California where and won't complain too much about our weather.
Yes, hopefully I'll get to visit soon, because I really, really want to visit California and be able to be out and do what I want to do as an adult. Because like I said, the last time was when I was a kid.
Right.
So I'd like to visit LA. I heard the streets are very crazy in terms of highways. Like, you guys have exits on both the left and right side and like 4 or 5 lanes. I'm like, wow, it's crazy.
We do. It depends on the freeway. Some freeways do have about 4 or 5 lanes. And sometimes depending on at what point of the freeway, they kind of open up a little bit more. They've been changing a lot of our freeways lately. They're having some express lanes being put in. The LA traffic is crazy, but you know, I love everything about LA, even though I do want to move. But LA is always home. I love everything about LA. LA traffic is crazy, but I mean, where else are you going to get good food? The beaches. Randomly walking down Hollywood, right? That's what I'm saying. Walking down Hollywood Boulevard, seeing all the people like pretending to be Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson. I think there's like some Whitney Houston's out there now, Madonna's. It's just lies to be here in LA. Like no one can ever say they came to California and they didn't have a good time, because you're literally gonna have a good time.
Yeah, and I've never heard of anyone that I know of that's been there that said they had a bad time in California, because there's always, it seems, something to do. So I would
definitely love to visit. There's always something to do. You would definitely enjoy Los Angeles. You would definitely love California in general, because just besides Los Angeles, I've never been, of course, I've never been to the Bay, but I heard it's so fun there. So that's one of my goals this year, is to explore my state. So get out of just my comfort zone of Southern California and explore different Northern California, different places in California.
Yeah, I would love to do kind of like a road trip around California and
just experience
the different atmospheres and people and everything.
Yeah, and for me, so that's definitely something I want to do. I want to kind of do a road trip around California, expand my readership, and just enjoy life and the different cultures and different aspects of life. Because, you know, with the president we got now, I don't know. I just want to live life and enjoy it.
Exactly, before it all ends.
I swear, sometimes I don't even want to turn on the news. I'm like, I'm going to be depressed, like, because he's so annoying.
Yes, it really does. As soon as he was elected, I was like, wow, this is definitely going to be something else.
I was upset that he even let him run. I was like, who thought this? I would have thought that was a joke. Like, this guy? Come on now.
Well, initially, I thought it was like a publicity stunt. And then when it kept going, I was like, wow, he really is considering this and he really would like to be the president. That's very interesting.
And then I literally broke down in tears when they announced him the president. I was like, this cannot be life. Like, and then some of these people who voted for him now, they're like, oh, I wish I didn't. I'm like, well, what were you listening to prior? What? Please tell me, because we wouldn't listen to the same person.
But I think it dates back to more so what people believe in terms of feminism and equality. And I feel like that might have played a part in it as well, because as brilliant and as smart as she is, you know, there are some people that still think archaic and believe that a woman can't do a job as well as a man can, and that did take away from her.
Yeah,
but I thought she was a great candidate. That was
the main thing. They felt like a woman was not capable of running the White House, running the country. I voted for Hillary, and I mm-hmm. thought she would have done a wonderful job. And anything is possible. They also said it was going to be impossible that a black man will run the president. We had Obama for 8 years, and I wish he was still there. So I definitely thought Hillary could have done it a better job. Hopefully we survive these 4 years as best as we can, and we get someone else. Maybe Hillary will, you know, try to do it again. Because I don't know what people think about it. Like, Hillary knew, had to know a little bit of something. Her husband was a president for 8 years, too.
Exactly. She kind of got that secondhand experience.
Right. Like,
she was some woman coming
off the street.
Mm-hmm. She had that experience, and she knew what she was doing. I thought it was the perfect match, but clearly America didn't, so.
Yeah. How sad. But I definitely, we have to live with, you know, what's going on. And I'm very a firm believer. So I pray and everything will work out and continue to strive to be as best as I can. But, of course, it's harder, you know, for like a Women's Day. There are so many different stuff people said. And for Women's History Month about women. Me, I'm like, look, I get up, I go to work, I'm an entrepreneur. I appreciate everything I did back in the day, because it makes to show that we are not only here to birth children and cook bacon in the kitchen. So I still stand for Hillary.
I do too. And if she would love to come back and try it again, I would be for her again. So I completely understand.
Sean Chris, it has definitely been. Okay, so I know somewhere you went by Sean Chris. Is it Sean Christopher or Sean Chris?
It's Sean Christopher. Sean Chris is actually my Instagram name. And it's that way because Christopher is a little too long. So I just went ahead and abbreviated.
Let me just make sure I have it correct.
But it is Sean Christopher.
Because it's long. Okay. Mm-hmm. And is that your, is that a pen name or is that your actual given name?
It's my pen and my actual name. It's my first and middle name.
Okay. Somebody like me.
Yes.
My first name is Tanisha, but of course that's very, very common. So I just kind of shortened my first name and used my middle name as my pen name.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit easier that way, and then also it's not very far from your actual name. So some people do call me Sean Christopher, and it doesn't surprise me because it is my name. Versus if I made something else up off the wall and somebody called me by that name, and then I'm like, wait a minute, my name is so-and-so, but I'm like, wait, I'm a writer too, so it's my pen name. So it makes things easy.
Me, and when I first came, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to come up with a name. I was like, I don't want to use Tanisha. Like, that's so common, Tanisha. And then to find out Tanisha Williams was even more common or together, I was like, no. And then somebody was like, well, why don't you go with your nickname? And I'm like, that's a little common too. And then I was just like, you know what? Forget it. I'm just going to do Tanisha Lene. My nickname, and my middle name. Let's just go with that. And it's very important as an author to have a name that your readers can remember.
Yes, it is.
And
it has
to
be unique.
I tell authors all the time, I'm like, because a reader can forget the name of your book, but if they remember your name, they can always just go plug that into Amazon, plug that into Google and find your book. So I tell every aspiring author, if you're looking for a pen name, make sure you're finding a pen name that is memorable. It's easy to pronounce. It's easy to remember for your readers.
Exactly, because if they don't remember your author name, it can be an issue. And even with the books, in terms of titling your books, I try to make sure that I keep my titles simple, like maybe one or two words, because I feel like the more words you put to the title, the harder it is for a person to remember. So I kind of just like to hit people with, like, one-liners or maybe one or two words, but nothing crazy.
Yeah. Or at least something that, like, rhymes so it's easy to remember. Like, of course, Homie Lover Friend is something that's easy to remember, especially if you're a 90s era. You instantly think R. Kelly, so you will always remember. Even if somebody can think about it, you know, forget the book, they'd be like, it's the song, the song, R. Kelly. So people start naming R. Kelly, then there you go. So, you know.
People have done that in the past as well.
Exactly. That's something I always tell, you know, when aspiring authors, you know, hit me up, and I'm like, make sure you have a memorable name, that something that's not hard to pronounce, they can easily remember. My auntie is a crazy urban fiction reader as well as me. So she, you know, she thinks I know all these authors. She thinks I know everybody. So she's like, I was reading this book and da-da-da-da. And then she was trying to tell me somebody's name, and I'm like, I've never heard who that is. So we go to look on Amazon, and I'm like, I can't even pronounce this author's name. And I'm like, that's not a good look, because if your readers can't remember or pronounce your name, how are they going to remember you?
Exactly. It has to be something that's easy to remember, short to the point, or something that has some type of significance already to it, because otherwise, like there are certain authors where I've picked up books in the past that I've read and thought they were really good, but when I went back to look for more by the author, because I didn't write the author's name down, they got lost in translation. So, like, the name of the person was so confusing that I wasn't able to remember it later on. But for somebody like Zane or someone like Eric Jerome Dickey or like Omar Tyree, I remember those because those are unique names.
Right.
They're not common, versus somebody that's naming their author pen something weird or misspelled or whatever. It's just easier
those
to remember.
The misspelled ones. I'm like, what?
In an attempt to be creative.
Yeah, I'm like, no. Actually, an author got mad at me over that. She had a pen name, and I was like, well, you know, let's bring, you know, go over your pen name. She had hit me up in my DMs for advice, and that was the first thing that stuck out to me. Like, it was like Miss Diamond Pinterest or something like that, and she spelled Miss like MZ, and I'm like, no, let's drop that.
Yeah, no.
We're just going to go ahead and drop that. But no.
But then also, I feel like when you do certain things like that, it kind of leaves you stagnant in one type of genre of writing, because typically you kind of find that type of spelling in something that is a little bit more street lit. So unless you're sure that's what you want to do for the rest of your career as a writer, I don't think that you should limit yourself that way. You got to think about how you're marketing yourself.
Exactly. And then for me, I'm like, when you're building your brand, I always tell myself, you want to see your book besides Amazon, right? So you want to see that in the covers of magazines. You want to see that on the bookshelf. You have to come up with relatable titles. You have to make sure your name and your brand is something that people is markable, like you said. So if you won't see that on, you got to make sure you can see yourself on the shelves of Walmart and Target. You have to think about the brand, overall brand that they want to represent.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Pin
exactly.
Dotrice or Diamond Pinterest, they not.
It's very
not,
unlikely
you know,
that
right. And
Barnes
that's what
and Noble,
I was trying
yeah.
to. Like, you know, you gotta go with what you want. But if Amazon is all you want to say you have a book, then so be it. But
mm-hmm.
I like to consider myself, I want to be a household brand. I want to be on Barnes & Noble shelf. I want to be on Target shelf. So I know I got to create titles that don't have curse words or thug and nigga in the titles. And, well, thug can definitely be on there. But, I mean, that's been done before.
Many
so,
times.
So, you know.
Many, many
yeah,
times.
Too many times. So... You want to have these, you know, these titles that they feel like they can mark. Because even if you, like, as a self-published author, I went and did the research to try to see how I can, as a self-published author, get my titles in Barnes & Noble. And that's definitely something that they look at. They want to know, how are you markable to us? How can we market you to, you know, gain readers and to gain money and to, you know, make a profit? And so that's how anytime I release or come up with a book or a book cover, that's what I'm thinking about. Is this markable to Barnes & Noble? Can I walk in Barnes & Noble and say, I'm trying to get this on your shelf? Not just not on BNN.com, but on your shelf where somebody can walk in and pick up that paperback and walk out the store with it.
Exactly, because otherwise, you know, if you follow those directions and do what you want to do, like, I feel like as an artist, you should be able to have that creative freedom, but you do have to be responsible enough to know kind of like what's marketable and what's not.
Right.
So, and you have to be hip on the current trends and things in terms of, you know, what people are looking forward to in terms of reading. So it's a blend
definitely,
of what you want to do versus what your readers would want.
And just find that middle ground. So there's always a way to do something. But like you said, you mentioned it earlier, you have to find your target market. And,
mm-hmm.
then I think that's what a lot of authors are missing out of their marketing plan and out of their branding plan, is that they have to find their target market.
And then once you find it, stick with it. And then if you like to expand yourself from there, you can. But I feel like that's the most important thing, to just find where your target is. If you write a book and you have no supporters, then the book will only go so far. Of course, if you just want to write for the fun, then it wouldn't matter. But if you're trying to reach an audience, you have to know what audience you're reaching first.
Definitely. Okay, thank you, Sean Chris. We have been on this phone for almost an hour, and it has definitely been a pleasure to talk to you. Before we go, go ahead and tell everyone where they can reach you on all your social media and where they can purchase
mm-hmm.
your book.
Okay, so my book can actually be purchased on Amazon. You just type in Homie Lover Friend or Jaded by Sean Christopher. That's S-H-A-W-N, Sean Christopher, C-H-R-I-S-T-O-P-H-E-R. Type that in, and then my book should come up. You can go to the Delphine Publications website, www.delphinepublications.com, and order the book that way. As far as my social media sites, Facebook, I'm author Sean Christopher. And Instagram, I'm author_Sean, S-H-A-W-N, Chris, C-H-R-I-S. and I should pop right up.
Okay. You guys did hear him say earlier in the call, his book, Jaded, will be released on April 4th on Amazon. So make sure you guys go ahead.
Yes, April 4th.
And you can catch him at the AMDMC in June.
And yes,
that will be hosted in Atlanta.
Yes, and I'm so excited about that. I've been to Atlanta before, but it was more so for personal. So this is more like a mixture of both. So I'm excited to see what's out there, especially at the award show.
Yeah, Atlanta's nice. So I definitely want to commend you on your congratulate you on your book. We make sure we will be going ahead and downloading that on April 4th. We'll also be giving away some copies, so make sure you guys head over to Unfiltered Talk Radio and follow us on Instagram and stay in tune for any of the giveaways if you have been slipping on them. But we will be back to make sure we get those giveaways so we can get support our authors and get their books out there to you guys. And as always, anytime we have a giveaway and we give books, all we ask is that you give an honest review on Amazon and Goodreads for our authors. Is there any departing words that you want to let the readers or the listeners know before you get off the call, Sean Christopher?
other than just to never give up as a writer, as a creator, whatever it is that you do, if you have a passion in it, just never give up, because I never thought that I would actually be on a radio show talking about a book that I didn't even think was going to be anything, a part of a publication that it's amazing. So it all started with me not giving up. And I would say that to any and everybody, like whatever it is that your dream is, your passion is, your hobby, never give that up, especially if it brings you joy.
Okay, definitely. We definitely want to congratulate you on all your success. Wish you nothing but more of this success, and you have a great weekend.
You too.
Thank you guys for tuning in to Unfiltered Talk Radio with your host, Chalene. We talked to author Sean Christopher. Make sure you guys go ahead and pop that book, Jaded, released on Amazon on April 4th. You can tune in to Unfiltered Talk Radio every Friday right here on Blog Talk Radio with me, your host, Chalene. Next week, we will be talking to author Jimmy Richardson about his book, Brooklyn Meets Wall Street. So make sure you guys tune in at 6 p.m. Eastern Pacific Standard Time and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also want to thank our supporters and sponsors, DC Book Diva, Tia Short, Concrete Rose Publications, Love for the Lockdown, Callie Kim. Without them, we make this possible. And we want to thank you guys for tuning in. Catch you next Friday. You guys have a great weekend.